This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning and this is the Breakfast Grill. Cooking oil, flour, liquefied natural gas, cement, steel bars and chicken. What is the commonality? All control items under the Ministry of Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs, which is tasked with creating a viable, competitive and sustainable domestic economy. So to help us understand how they are planning to do so, whilst also ensuring that consumers are protected, is its Minister, Dato' Sri Alexander Nanta Lingi, who's joining us in the studio today. Good morning, Dato' Sri.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking time to speak to us. I think, you know, whatever said and done, 2020 unfortunately has been dominated by COVID-19 and the race to flatten the pandemic curve. But in the early days of the first phase of the MCO, with Malaysia and practically the whole world under some form of lockdown, for the first time, I think for many of us, we faced empty shelves in the shops and shortages of some essentials. Now, this, if anything, emphasizes the importance of your ministry. But what lessons did we learn so that perhaps we can avoid future shortages and ensure food security for the future?
Firstly, we must understand, we must know that, and I think everyone knows that, we never had an experience like this ever before. Yeah? Not in Malaysia, not in the rest of the world. This pandemic is something very, very extraordinary and hit us quickly and surprised us, many of us, and that we were never prepared for it. That must be understood from the beginning. We implemented on the March 18 MCO. People panic. Yeah? That's why we had what we call panic buying spree at the time, a period of about 1 week, a week plus. And people rushed to the shops, to the malls, you know, to the supermarkets and grab what they consider as essentials, yeah? And many things actually ran out of stock. I was very new in the ministry at that time, didn't have any much experience at all in this ministry, yeah? Previously, I was in another kind of ministry, rural development, when previous government at the time. So our officers were also never had an experience like that, you know? All we ever had was just during the festivals when people rushed to buy food, you know, essential for the certain kind of festival that we have a few throughout the year. Malaysia is multicultural and we have many festivals, yeah? That's just about it, yeah? The first thing we did was really how to control this panic buying. I must really attribute a lot of praise for our enforcement unit in the ministry. We have what we call Enforcement Control Centers, ECC. We have 72 throughout Malaysia, you know. It was used effectively to gather latest information, especially complaints, wherever throughout the country where prices of goods were being sold unusually too high, too much, and then some essentials were out of stock. And through that Enforcement Command Centers, we had this system of gathering information. And we had to act quickly. We sent our officers to the ground and to make sure the people understand the situation and tell them, don't panic. It wasn't easy, though. Face mask factory, if you like, you know. And we were assured. But that time, face mask makers or manufacturers themselves were finding it difficult to meet the demand. That's why there was a lot of issues when we raised the selling price to 2 ringgit. The purpose of doing that was so that imports could be made and airflown from other countries, especially China. Anything less than that, you know, everybody were rushing for face masks all over the world anyway.
Yeah, we couldn't get stock.
We couldn't get stock. What we did with face masks was to restore availability. People didn't seem to understand that when they criticized us for putting it high, but we studied the scenario and the facts behind it. We said we must allow imports. And then, of course, the caring prime minister said, no, Alex, it's too high. You must bring it much lower. So we set it 150. Then, of course, importers say, it's not fair. You know? Our shipment's already on the way. Some yes, some not so true, because you know, it happens so fast that we change. But at least when we raise it up like that for a few weeks, there were a lot of imports, you know, air flown in. We couldn't wait for shipment by sea to bring those in containers. So they were air flown in. So there were price quite high compared to the normal prices before COVID. Ceiling price was only 80 cents, and they're being sold at even less than that. So people compared. It's not fair because a situation requires drastic, solutions.
Mm.
But looking back from the beginning, we thought that we were right anyway.
And so, Dr. Sri, you know, but we see the occasional press report where you try to reassure the public
yep.
that there are sufficient supplies, they shouldn't be hoarding. Now, my issue is that, do you think people are reacting this way because there isn't clear communication and maybe there should be better coordination between ministries to avoid this? I think because there's sometimes always misunderstanding over SOPs or changes in SOPs. So people tend to overreact.
Yeah. I don't blame them really. And I don't defend ourselves too much in that, you know. There's some truth in that, something that we perhaps did not communicate to the public well enough and clear enough. Yes, there may have been some weaknesses in that, but we're always improving on that. That's why I told our officers, look, you know, always look for rooms for improvement. Cari ruang dan peluang untuk penambahbaikan. And also, these issues are actually nothing new. It's been always every now and then come back to us, you know. But it is still also hard for people to understand. For instance, right now, the onion. People say, hey, why? It's so expensive. I mentioned this. Then some people out there say, look, why don't the government do something about the price? What can we do? I don't think we can set it at a certain price, what level. If we set the price too low, the importers here will never import because the price of producing it from India, exporting it from India, is already quite high.
Mm.
So the importers will not import. In the end, there will be no bawang India at all. Now, what can we do as a ministry apart from giving subsidy? But then, can we give subsidy to every product, every foodstuff that we need? Maybe that's not practical, you know? Yeah.
I will come back to the the subsidies in a minute, Dato' Sri. And I want to discuss this a bit more in terms of controlled pricing.
Mm.
Because I think, yes, the reality is the economy is weak.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the reimposition of the CMCO, people are feeling the pinch.
Yeah. Sure.
But if you think about it in terms of a longer term, do price controls ultimately work? And we still practice it at your ministry, right? Because economic theory suggests that, in a way, blanket price controls are self-defeating and regressive as an economy progresses. And this is something Bank Negara has highlighted before.
Yeah.
So should we move away from price controls eventually?
Yeah, put it this way. That's why Malaysian government have always this approach. We go into strategic and selective and targeted subsidy. Yeah. We can't have a blanket, but we do have targeted. Very much essential good, we do. For instance, now COSS, they call it cooking oil subsidy scheme.
Flour is another one, right?
Flour is another one. And then there's some others, you know, even brass, you know, at a different level, at the production level and also processing level. Now, these are very essential food product. We do. We do subsidy and we do price control. There is that mechanism by controlling the import. That's why we still have the permits, whether to allow import or to control imports. Yeah. Now, there is a very, a system that's been in place for a long time already.
Should it be relooked though? Because like you mentioned permits, for example, one issue. And this is something, a study done by a government agency that comes under your ministry, which is the MyCC, right? The Malaysian Competition Commission.
Yep.
Now, in their report in 2019, they actually went and studied, this is the humble vegetable, the cabbage.
Mm-hmm.
And there's APs on cabbage, approved permits.
Yep.
And they came to uncover that not everybody was a legitimate or genuine user of the AP and they were passing it on.
Yeah, I'm told.
And as a result, cabbage prices actually, people pay an extra 15 to 30 cents per kg. So that's why my view is, you know, should we ultimately relook at the whole AP system? Because in a way, sometimes the consumer ends up paying more for the good rather than actually, in a way, helping the consumer.
I agree absolutely with you. Yeah, I agree. Because in principle, so many people apply for a permit. Who do you give?
Yeah, and how do you control
it? Now, talking about cabbage, I hope it is understood. Cabbage permit is not under us.
Yes, it's from the Ministry of Agriculture,
and Food Industry, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But in principle, I agree with you. Why should we have permits to import? It should be if there is for a reason of controlling cabbage is not competing with our locally produced cabbage. Maybe we should look at some other mechanism to safeguard our farmers, yeah? Because in matter of food security, we also must not allow our food producers, farmers, to be at the mercy of there's a possibility of dumping of food products or any other product into our economy, into our country. Mm. You see, food security is a very important issue for Malaysia, has always been, and is even more so now that we realize when during earlier days of COVID, when Vietnam says they're not going to export rice to us, we kind of panic about that.
So, Dr. Sri, is there communication? That's the thing, because it involves so many ministries, right, at the end of the day.
Yes.
So, for example, let's say we when it comes to cabbage, it's Ministry of Agriculture. But when it comes to other items, for example, there could be meaty involved, for example.
Yeah, of
so,
course.
Is there communication between the different ministries and even with MOF to eventually find a better solution?
Yes. Gladly, I'll tell you, there has been this establishment or setting up of clusters, you know. So there we have clusters on food security or food supplies.
And this is not the COVID cluster, but a good cluster.
It's a good cluster. All right. Yeah, right. People get worried about when you talk about cluster. But this cluster is clusters of ministries. Yeah. So our ministry, KPD and SGP, MITI, MAFE, that is Agriculture and Food Industries, we are an economy we put into one cluster to make sure there's coordination. The very thing we have to do is, like you said, we have to coordinate all this. And there are other clusters where, you know, strategic fields. So, yes, to answer your question simply, yes, there are coordination now, you know.
Will we see any kind of changes in the legislation or removal of APs eventually then? Is there like a price, like a timeline, a target?
No real timeline, but we feel there's an urgency on that, especially when we are very concerned about food security situation. I can assure you that one.
You're listening to The Breakfast Grill, and in the hot seat this morning is the Minister of Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs, Dato Sri Alexander Nanta Alinghi. When we come back, are we going to see a unity budget, and when are the Sarawak state elections? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Shao Ning, and this is The Breakfast Grill, where this morning I'm joined by Dato Sri Alexander Nanta Alinghi, the Minister of Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs. Just a moment ago, we were discussing how perhaps we can avoid hoarding and what are the lessons we can learn from COVID-19. Now, Dato Sri, I want to go back to the subsidies which you mentioned just not too long ago. Now, we know Budget 2021 mm-hmm. has allocated 400 mm-hmm. million for cooking oil. Mm-hmm. 40 million for flour and another 20 million for the Buy Malaysia program, goods program.
Yep.
So it's 460 million allocated for subsidies. But I always question this because I wonder whether the money could be better used. Maybe redistributed in the form of cash hands out so it's more targeted and even have a better multiplier effect on the economy. Because not everybody needs cheaper cooking oil. You know, some people can afford to pay. But then because it's a subsidized price, everybody enjoys it.
First, you mentioned those three specifically, so I would like to correct a little bit of that. The 20 million on KBBM, that is Kampen Beli Barangan Malaysia, is not subsidy.
It's not subsidy, to be fair.
That one is for us to run program to do promotions so that we can revitalize the retail section or sector of our economy. In Bahasa Melayu, untuk merancakkan sektor peruncitan. Now, we need to assist this retailers so that people can come out and buy confidently and not to be afraid of COVID, and as long as they adhere to the SOPs, please come, go out and buy, you know? Mm. And when you buy, please buy Malaysian product. That is nothing against other people's product, but when we promote Kampen Beli Barangan Malaysia, if we are successful in that, the knock-on effect on that, the spin-offs will be great for our economic recovery. Let me just explain. When you buy Malaysian product, you know, there are so many good products now. That's why we have this tagline, barang baik, barang kita. You buy food product, when you look made in Malaysia or made in UK, people have sometimes rather unfortunately a bias in their thinking, oh, imported goods are better than our own product. That's not necessarily true, really. You know, I found out that. You see, so buy barangan Malaysia, if we buy our own product, then we will surely be able to help the producers to be able to sustain their business and they can carry on their business. Then they don't have to close shop. Now, that is one achievement. And they make some good profit, good money. When they don't close shop, that means they also can keep their workers. Mm. So workers do not lose their job. That is also our main objective.
But provided the good is on par, right? With international standards.
Yeah. That's why
so how do we know that it is? I mean, is that something your ministry is focusing on?
Yeah, yeah. If you look, say food stuff, we have the CIRIM, okay? And then some, we have the HACCP. We have the MESTI, M-E-S-T-I, all these things. And of course, we have this halal standards. All these things are well accepted globally as good standards of food, you know? Then we are playing our role when we buy a Malaysian product to help on economic recovery of our country. This is important. It's not a small thing. It's not trivial, you know? It's very important. We have to keep our business people going on with their own with their businesses so that, you know, business activities can carry. That's why the campaign Beli Barangan Malaysia, 20 million allocated to our ministry to carry on with the campaign. Then you asked me about subsidies.
Yeah? Yes.
Yeah, okay. I have not forgotten that.
Yes, I was going to ask you because we still end up spending something like 440 million ringgit.
The 400 million ringgit is to subsidize cooking oil meant for low-income people, all right? 400 million. This subsidy is broken into two parts. One is direct to the palm oil refinery at the source so that price at the source is cheaper to the packers, the repackers. Now, to control so that we try to, like you said, target group.
Mm.
Yeah, we target the lower income. That is why we control the packaging to package it into only 1 kilogram per small pack in the plastic bag. That way, we have realized through the experience, the target group will get the benefit of the subsidy. Of course, we must admit, not 100%. It is well-intentioned.
But Dato Sri, I would just wonder whether in the longer term, you know, because we have all these price controls and then we have all these subsidies. In a way, it is an artificial trade barrier.
Okay.
And it does require legislation and enforcement mechanism, which is not cheap. I mean, it does require manpower and effort from your ministry. It can be costly and time-consuming. And yet, we are supposed to be a country that is progressive, that believes in free trade. And ultimately, demand and supply will find a price.
Yeah.
So could we perhaps think of, you know, the next step, the evolving of the Malaysian economy also? Because some people argue, let's say, for example, price controls, in a way, encourage hoarding. And I'll use bread as an example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, during the height of the MCO, it was very difficult to buy a loaf of bread because it was cheap. I mean, it's still cheap. You know, it's like $2.30 a loaf.
Yeah.
So people were just unnecessarily purchasing more than they needed. And then we had social media pictures of it being thrown away. So if we never had price controls and we let price, you know, market forces dictate the price, it would naturally have gone up. Yes, and maybe it would have been a little bit painful for some people to afford it. But eventually, prices will correct also because, you know, there'll be more supply in the market.
Well, from what I hear from you, you're talking about ideal economic theories, things that, which I fully understand. But here, I think realistically in our society, in our population, there are people who are really quite poor, you know, who need our assistance and who need our protection. That's why we have to have some kind of subsidy for them. You know,
I agree. I mean, things like cash handouts, you know, the Penjana Prihatin package.
Yeah.
Those really are useful for some segments of society.
Yeah. Let me get back to that. You probably allude to the point that you might as well give them money directly to them rather than subsidize and then leakages, so to speak. You see, they need cooking oil for food every day. Processing food and things like that. Now, practically, if you give them, okay, what subsidy? 30 ringgit a month for your so-called cooking oil subsidy. If you give them cash, more than likely, they will spend it on other things. Then in the end, they still have no money to buy cooking oil. I mean, impossible.
Possible.
Yeah. I know people, I know my own close relative. You give them money, probably they should buy food. But then he said, okay, I go buy top up for my handphone. No, no, seriously. I'm not looking down on them management, but the temptation is that. So they still need cooking oil in the end, you know, to process their food for the day. So I think this has been thought out actually. Yeah.
Okay, but we are still giving out all these needy people, Bantuan Sarahidup, different cash handouts, right?
Yeah.
So you still think, should we do away with all this or are you saying it's a combination?
A combination is good, you know. I agree that we should not over-subsidize the consumers in the country. Those who can afford, please, you know, go on the market forces, right? And, have conscience. Don't compete with the poor people to buy the subsidized one and you can afford. Anyway, government has to be find a combination. I agree with you. I agree that we should fine-tune it. Maybe while I'm in this ministry, I have always mentioned that we will look for things to fine-tune, to do better. You know? When I came in, if you remember, I was asked, the first thing in my statement as a minister after I came in, I said, I will not intend to reinvent the wheel. You know, meaning to say, the previous government, the PS government may have done something good. I said, I'm willing to just carry on with it. And I found out there were some, they were quite good. We are carrying on with it. But there is always room for improvement, and this is where we are looking at. And to take on your suggestions, yes, we are tweaking to fine-tune how better to make the subsidy more efficient.
You're listening to a special extended breakfast grill with Minister of Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs, Datuk Sri Alexander Nata Lingi. When we come back after the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin, will the unity budget be passed in Parliament? And when are the Sarawak state elections? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to a special extended breakfast grill with Datuk Sri Alexander Nata Lingi, Minister of Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs. Just before the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin, we were discussing what the ministry is doing to help us Malaysians during these trying times. Now, Datuk Sri, I have to ask you about politics because it is budget season. And debates are going on. In fact, we do know that there's been somewhat of a contentious issue between both sides of the August House.
Yeah.
Both have, I think, been pretty vocal in terms of what they want. Can you just give us an update on how the debates are going on at this moment?
What I've been observing, debates from both sides of the House has been very, I would say, active, very bold, and people...
But that's good, right, in a way?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, of course. I think it's good because say what you really need to say. But of course, to me, there is a border between being articulating your arguments well, then also doing it too aggressive and some to the point of insults is not good, you know? It'll be even more helpful to the country if you are being constructive. Yes, oppose, by all means, if you have to. If things really you think is not right, then you think there is a solution, there is a better way of doing it. Unfortunately, sometimes it's so easy to criticize. Many criticize without offering what better way to do things, you know? And that would be difficult. You know, what is it that you say, everything is wrong, okay? Tell me what you want us to do right.
Datuk Sri, what are the sticking points between the two main coalitions, right? For example, on the Pakatan Harapan side, I mean, they have voiced that the budget is perhaps not expansionary enough, that they're not spending, we're not spending enough as a country. So the 330 billion seems small.
You mean, you want my opinion on them?
I mean, yeah, they have one sticking point. I mean, is this something that, no, because I'm asking since you're on PN side, is this something that will be adjusted for perhaps? Will it be re-looked at? Or even things like JASA allocation?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, if I were the Minister of Finance, this is my personal opinion, I would do the adjustment. Yeah, I would take seriously good views from both sides of the house. Yeah, I would do that. But let's see what happens, whether that is going to be happening.
So do you think...
I do believe that part of this budget can be fine-tuned, you know? We perhaps can take good standpoint or looking at some of the suggestions by the oppositions are indeed can be useful and can be adopted. But of course, that's entirely up to the... Not entirely, but I hope the Minister of Finance will do some fine-tuning.
Now, do you think there will be a delay of the voting till perhaps next week, which has been reported in some news portals because of the shorter sessions in Parliament? Mm. I think some ministries have not had a chance, right, to go through their budget debates.
Delaying for 1 week, I don't know. I don't really think so. But that's for the speaker to take into consideration.
Because what would be the consequence if the budget vote fails for Perikatan National Government? I mean, we do know PN has a slim majority of 113 seats in this 222 seat Dewan Rakyat, right?
Okay, can I respond to that question? What would be happening? Mm. I don't want to... it's very hard for me to think what would be happening, yeah? So why not I respond in this way? My view is, let us all support it, yeah? Let this budget pass. Let what has been listed down here, especially those that are helping the poor, the needy, the business people who are really in need of this assistance that's listed out in the budget, and many more, let those be rolled out as a budget that's already passed. Now, politically, yes, if we can't get going like this, let's agree. Let's have an election by March. This is my view. Yeah? But let this budget pass. Let things get going smoothly for the time being. And then let us all prepare for an election. We always have elections by March in the past years anyway.
Mm.
Yeah? If people ask me, why not January? Why not February? Well, COVID seems to be still at the height now. But then we have Chinese New Year coming up in January. Early February.
Mm.
Then several other things early in the year. So March, we have always had a March date for an election. So that would be the earliest. This is my view.
Mm.
And I hope it should happen like that. What's the point of defeating it tomorrow? And what do the Prime Minister have to do? People say by convention, Westminster way of doing it, you have resigned.
Yeah, because it's a vote of no confidence, right?
It can be read as a vote of no confidence. Mm. And then what is going to happen? Are we going to have an election? Is the election commission ready to have an immediate election? Are the people ready to have an election during this COVID-19? The spike. We have had experience not too long ago, only last month, in September in Sabah. Look what happened. So to me, be a little bit more patient. You know, let this pass. Let's all agree and have a general election in March. That's my view, Alex's view.
And Dazushree, what about Sarawak? You know, let's talk about your home state. Because you are the Secretary General of Parti Pesaka Bumiputra Bersatu, which is actually one of the four parties under GPS coalition that forms the Sarawak state government, right?
Yeah.
Now, Sarawak is supposed to have their state elections before August 2021.
Yep.
I think GPS has come out to say that they want to have the state elections. But realistically, like you just mentioned a minute ago, COVID-19 is still, you know, the numbers of cases are still very high. So it doesn't really matter whether it's a general election or any state election. How are we going to have one? I mean, do you see this happening anytime soon?
Yes, we are ready for it. That one I can tell you. GPS is ready for the election. But can we have an election immediately? It looks like everyone is concerned about this COVID spike, the COVID-19 spike. So it may not be a good idea, yeah, to have it now in December. So we have to look, where is the window that we have? Well, you mentioned August earlier on. Some people mentioned June, but there's technicalities in it, right? Because the last election was actually held in May, isn't it? So anyway, how do we look at the months to come? There's not much window, is there?
No.
Even only March, maybe. Mm. February, just after Chinese New Year, maybe, you know? Because April is Ramadan, and then Hari Raya, May, and then we have Gawai. I'm an Iban. Please don't disturb us during Gawai.
It's a very big, yeah, very
well,
big festival.
Let us enjoy ourselves during our Gawai. But there you are. You can actually look at the options that we have. Politically, we are prepared, but we have to be sensitive to the people's wish. And I'm very happy to hear the Chief Minister that we have, Dato' Patingi Abang Johari, is very sensitive to the people. And he has made a statement to say that we will not hold it during, you know, the spike in the COVID time. But we don't know when. He still is the one who is going to call the date, isn't it?
Mm.
But to be sensitive because of COVID is good, because we don't want to be responsible for people who can even lose their life if we're not careful, if there's a big spike just because of an election.
But Dato Sri, you know, one way around is, and we've seen this in Patusabhi, right, is to declare a state of emergency just for that state or for that constituency.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a possibility for Sarawak, I mean, let's just talk about the Sarawak state elections, to avoid elections on the same basis for health reasons then? Would it be something that GPS would agree to?
To speak on behalf of GPS, I mean, I think we are more ready for the elections rather than to have an emergency like that. Emergency for real reason of being concerned about COVID-19, yeah, it's a good reason. But politically, no matter what, people will say, you twist and turn, you're taking advantage.
Delaying
you know?
The inevitable.
Yeah, delaying the inevitable. And the people will blame the prime minister, you know. It's not fair on them. So I think I'm not wrong to say that we, GPS and PB, we are ready for the election anytime. We hope that Election Commission is ready. That's the point.
Mm.
Yeah.
And another observation on Sarawak politics is the rise of local nationalism and that, you know, we have unresolved issues with regards to MA63. Now, I want to know, I'm just curious, what's on GPS wish list from the federal government, especially since Sarawak is a kingmaker when it comes to forming the government?
Yeah, we do not think of ourselves whether we're kingmaker or not. Remember, we were not in this situation when we started to ask for greater autonomy during the previous chief minister, the late Tok Nan, you know, Tan Sri Anan Satim. We were part of BN that time. We were the government, very stable. So it's not about when we ask for greater return to what has been ours and eroded. That's the gist of it.
Mm.
So we want to be treated and recognized as what we were when we started as Malaysia in those days, right? So this feeling about unresolved issues, yeah, we have resolved many important issues. For instance, the payment by the Petronas. Those are milestones that we have already achieved. There are still some more, yeah? Some can be done administratively. Some will have to be by whether we amend the Perlembagaan, or to say that we restore our, what do you call, status? No, let it be an ongoing process, you know. Why seem to quarrel so much about it in a sense, you know? To me, it is already an ongoing process. And we have made some achievement. It's not like we have not achieved anything at all. It's not like that, yeah? And GPS, of course, we are friendly to the federal government, yeah? We're part of the federal government and that's why I'm in the cabinet, right? So we'll do it in a way, okay, we are friends, but even though we're friends, this is what we need, this is what we want, this is what our people want, we still stick to our position, we speak for Sarawak interests, right? And you don't back out because we are together now. Not because, we're kingmaker, you don't do this, we get out. We hope we don't have to say that. We hope we don't have to do that. GPS, PBB, we're gentlemen. But don't take us for granted. We know what we want and we know what our rights are. It has to be consistent. It has to be done eventually and hopefully not for too long. By no way, no means that we are letting up on what we want and for what is ours. That, I can assure you, will continue to be our mission as Sarawakian.
On that note, thank you for your time today. Joining me on the Breakfast Grill this morning was Dato' Alexander Nanta Linggi, Minister for Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.